Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killeby, and I have my co-author here today, Toshi Matsunaga. Say hello, Toshi.
Hello, hi everyone.
Well, Toshi and I are getting together regularly, obviously, because we just wrote a book, and there are so many topics to talk about, and they do all gravitate towards repression. Toshi and I were talking about, how we mention it a lot, and whether that's a good or a bad thing. And the way I've seen it is with emotional repression, if you haven't done repression inquiry, you don't know that your system is constantly filtering out information in every conversation, when you're listening to a teacher. And anything that gets close to the emotions that you've buried kind of has to be filtered out without your knowledge or even your consent. I've learned this, and Toshi has too, by mentoring and working with people, where very simple skills are being explained, but they have to be explained like two or three times, not because they're difficult, but because they challenge that part of us that's buried. The conditioning is trying to filter out the information. This is why I do so many podcasts, is I was encouraged to do that because of this subject matter, then the way we filter things out, that we have to hear it for a while. And I kind of understand my role as a teacher now to keep saying this until somebody can hear it, because I know then that that leads them to the root of suffering. And I think Toshi feels the same way. And we're going to talk about a few areas today that this is also part of the filtering out, Toshi, when I think about it, because start with, for example, when we go to non-duality teachings or Eastern practices, we just talked about this. We don't realize if we have buried emotions, we don't know or understand our operating system. We're not conscious to it. So like you said before, maybe you can elaborate on this, is that we're going about our day and we're stressed out, we're anxious, but we don't know the source of it because we have the buried emotions. Then we go to a meditation or even sitting with a teacher who's just being. And we think, and everything is coming and going. And after a while, the need for safety is satisfied. We don't really have to deal with the root of everything that happened throughout the day. We just sit as awareness and we feel okay. We feel better and more expansive. And we don't know when we have buried emotions that that's our need for safety being met, and that it's just safety. It's not realization. It's just sitting and being in a way that's safe from the buried emotions, which means the next day we're going to go to work. We're going to get stressed out because we're not getting to the root. We might even then be addictively drawn back to the teachings and practices. So, what do you have to say about that, Toshi? I'm sure something.
Yeah, I think I can say a lot about that because I used to do that all the time. So I might be feeling crap or shitty that day, and you kind of know there's something unconsciously there, but because of repression, I only know to work it out in my head. All I'm doing regarding body is to get away from feeling something. So I'm on this kind of trauma reaction mode, I guess that's what repression is, I guess, to a point. So I'm just, go about my day, trying to manage my feelings and trying to look for something to think my way out of this. So is it because I did this, or is it because I ate this, or is it because someone said this to me, or all of that stuff? But then when you're seeking spirituality, you just go to your usual stuff. If it's meditation, or if it's you're listening to your teacher, or you go to a YouTube clip. And certain thoughts will come. Certain thoughts might come, and I might, and those might be, oh, there's nobody here, or you don't need anything because there's nobody need anything, or you don't need to want anything like that. It's like, and those thoughts, and then when I grab them, believe that will make me feel so good because I can actually temporarily push my uncomfortableness now by believing those things, so that I don't have to feel something, and how addictive that is, and how that makes you feel so good. Because then that's, I will keep coming back for more. And I hate to say most of the spirituality are like that. Again, we've talked about drug dealing last podcast, or maybe two podcasts ago, but it's so tempting, those thoughts and those pointers are, because they actually, when you believe them, they are so soothing, because you can actually tick off so many things that you believe in and manage to do that. And so it's difficult to come out of, and it's really difficult to see, like you're saying, that you don't really see that you're filtering things out, and you're only choosing to listen to or feel or hear things the way the conditioning wants to, you know. So there might be, you know, I believe the life is always trying to give us things that we need to feel, be with all the time, but we can also ignore that too if you're not fully conscious of what's happening unconsciously. So we only pick and choose what it feels safe to us, you know. And spirituality, especially non-duality stuff, it has many good, juicy, attractive pointers where we can land and soothe ourselves. And the reliefs you get, it's like, oh my God, all day I've been worried about this. And now, of course, I don't have to worry about anything because there's nobody here. There's nobody here to suffer. And all that stuff just feels so good. And then the next day, you feel worse or something like that because it's only temporary, the pleasure you get. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned needs because that's another thing. If I were to rewind years ago, because if people are sitting in meditation or sitting with teachers right now, they don't know any more than I did, or you, I didn't know, and you didn't know that when we're sitting there with buried emotions, those are the needs. So I'll just say it to everybody, if you haven't done work like this, if you have buried anger or hurt, that's fear of feeling and expressing those emotions and fear of the rejection that might come. So those are externalized as needs. So we can't see it, but we walk into a room or a path and like we're radiating these needs. It's all v invisible coming from the unconscious. And the need demands that our environment is safe, for example. And that's a need that's governing everything. It's evolution, it's trauma. And so we can't ignore that. Even if spiritual teachers tell us to, we will still be driven by that because that's evolution. Teachers can't override it, certainly with a bypass. But if you don't know you have it, then when you sit down in meditation, it's not just with buried emotions. You sit down with unmet needs, which are simple things like I need safety from this buried emotion, and I need love and approval. And that's governing everything, and it over and anything that we learn through the mind, or frankly, even through awareness, is still being driven by the unmet needs because that's our operating system. And that's how I wanted to ask the next question, Toshi, is going back. I mean, did you know that those needs were there? And then what things did you learn? I guess that's my question because I didn't learn anything about the needs, and I kind of had the sense that there's a bunch of people with trauma in spirituality that do have unmet needs, and one of them is for safety, and that's why we've been drawn to, in part, these Eastern practices because we had emotional repression.
Yeah.
What's your thought on that? Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that was the case, like you said it, but it was manifesting, or it will look like there's something wrong with me, so I need to fix myself. Or there's something that's missing here, so I need to get it from something. Go out and get it so I don't have so I can feel something, so I don't have to feel something. So but I didn't know all that needs, the simple needs to be loved or to be held or to be accepted or to be safe was running the show. It was more about the stories and more about me not feeling something. You know, that's why it's so confusing and so difficult to catch emotional repression because it hides in stories and identities because it feels really true that that is the case. But underneath all of that is it's really about not wanting to feel something or over expressing emotions or not feeling those things. But my conditioning will definitely say otherwise. No, you need this, Toshi, so you feel better. And I feel so
Yeah.
true. If you can only get this, then you're gonna have this. And now that will feel so true. And whenever I get it, yes, makes me feel so good because I got my needs met and I don't have to be scared or it goes away temporarily. But the conditioning is still running the show because the more you do it, it reinforces the idea that this is, I have to keep doing this and I have to keep making this real when it's just for sensations and feelings in some way. So it just, re the whole thing reinforces itself. Yeah. But
Yeah.
so, yeah, that's what I say, yeah.
Well, this brings up other stuff for me because I know I can just bring this topic up and you'll find something here. Because we're talking about the need for safety and love. And if you look at what we do in spiritual practice, because you said it's in a lot of Eastern practices and teachings, and I completely agree. Because if a practice or teaching doesn't mention specifically repression, it's probably part of repression. Because it's not in our vocabulary to say we're angry when we're anger repressors. It's therefore not in our tool set as teachers to mention these things. But so with, by not mentioning these things, when you come to a teacher, anyone, and they get you to look at an identity or something that's arising, do you know that you're believing in that thing to stay safe from buried emotions? That's my question to anyone who's listening. When you're looking at core limiting beliefs, in terms of just efficiency, you're driven by the need for safety from buried emotions and love and approval. That's why you have those identities. It's so practical to pay attention to the need for safety, because if you get to the buried emotions where the need for safety really is, the identities can finally go away in the natural way. They're there to protect you. And that's just, it's, so it's not philosophy to me. This is very much rooted in experience and skill to not overlook this need for safety. Here's my question, Toshi. At what point did you become aware? Because it wasn't until KI that I became aware that not only my identities had been there for love and safety, but my processing of them kept me safe from the buried emotions and continued to give me love. So it perpetuated suffering to look at ego, is one way of saying it, the way that we were doing it.
Yeah, that's a juicy one. So what I can say is, and to people who might be listening, that who wants to get to repression, is don't stop there. Don't stop, because there are, I know there are so many modalities and traditions that touches some unconscious stories and identities, and it can feel like you're uncovering a lot of unconscious stuff, and you feel like you're making progress, and I guess that's part of the way, and we all come from that. But please do not stop there, because stopping there is just as bad as not knowing anything about repression. Because very fact that you staying there and just working on the ego, as Scott said, stories and the identity and the separate self, is part of the repression, and it wants to keep you working on that and not go to the repression itself, you see. And yeah, I couldn't spot that myself. And that's what we come from as KI, as a modality. We used to just work on, second dimension stuff, stories and identity. And that's why we clearly say that's a bypass if you stay there as it is, because that reinforces the whole idea of the fact that we need to believe in something or stay in a certain area within the unconscious so that we don't have to get to the deepest fears of fears and the fears of emotions and emotions themselves. So yeah, it's, I don't know if I'm being clear, but it's you have to, yeah, if you're not getting to the emotions or buried emotions or what we call third dimension, you're just bypassing it. It just reinforces it. So yeah, that's what you have to get to. And it, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that's why we have to just encourage people to just do the work and experience this yourself, within your consciousness, within your body. So it makes sense, because it's not necessarily an understanding just in your mind, because mind itself is not designed to listen to this. So, like back to what we were saying in the beginning, when I teach or when I mentor people, I can sense when they're just fogging out because they don't really want to hear this, or unconditional thing is running. So I just tell them, just tell me if you're fogging out, just let me know, because you won't be able to hear me. I'll just stop and I'll say in another way so you can hear me, because that's the conditioning or the system works that way. You start to kind of fog out, or I'm explaining about certain tools and you might not be here to, you might not be able to hear me because of the conditioning. But that's okay. That's what we face with. That's why me and Scott is kind of talking about the same thing again and again in a different way, because it's, the work is simple. And the conditioning is the repression is simple, but the conditioning makes it very, very complicated because it likes it that way. And then it likes to keep you confused. And that's part of the whole thing. So yeah, it's, yeah. So the fogging out or confusion is normal in the work. And then, some of you listening to this podcast might not make sense, or you just can't hear what we're talking about, but that's okay, But that's why we really recommend experiential work, because you don't have to understand it and grab it and keep it in your pocket as a knowledge or understanding. You can actually feel this and see this in consciously in our bodies, and then as energy sort of thing. So you get to see how simple it is. You're just up against yourself, your mind, that's all. But it's really hard because your mind is listening to us. Your conditioning is moving every day, making choices for you see. So
Yeah.
that's the bet. But we're trying to come through the gap or trying to create a window where we can come in and speak to you in between the
Yeah.
conditioning. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's important because one of the topics today is the trauma bonding that goes on among people and in relationship, not just our personal relationships, but in our teaching and mentoring and training and coaching and therapy relationships, sponsorship, in which both people have repressed emotions and don't know it. That's how I would categorize a trauma bond. If you want to be very general, we have to bond from our trauma when we don't know that we have it. And we're actually interfacing with each other. We don't have a choice. We have to stay safe and get love. We can say that toxic relationships are a trauma bond, but that keeps us safe from knowing that we trauma bond in peaceful relationships because it's buried anger often there. So I would say a trauma bond in spirituality can look like a very peaceful thing because the volcano of anger repression isn't being tapped into in the relationship or in the community or in the group. So then teachers have a responsibility, we do, to step in. I think, and speak up, especially if we've taken on the role of I'm the one that's going to show you reality, or that's a, that role could be driven by love, safety, and approval if coming from repression, but can't be authentic if we're processing at that level. This raises the issue of us as safety dealers, teachers, coaches, therapists. We're dealing safety. We're keeping people safe from their buried emotions, which would be okay if they would consent to it, but often they come to us for transformation. They can't get it that way. And that's an issue. So, what do you think about the trauma bond that happens when people in relationship, especially teachers, just simply don't mention this subject and what happens as a result?
Yeah, because I think we trauma bond because we're scared, right? So I'm gonna be very controversial, but we always controversial, Scott, so I'm not worried about that. But if you feel really good when you hear a certain teacher, and when you use the words like, "Oh, I really resonate with this teacher," or you do get a temporary relief, from that teacher, but you're still suffering. I will question that. I will question that. How do you say the reaction towards pointers, teachings, traditions? I could almost say the one that triggers you, that's who you want to be really listening to. I could say it like this, because if you're suffering anyway, and most of us are suffering, so because we get in our needs met, if that, let's say Scott is teaching on repression, or and then I'm a non-dual teacher that hasn't really done the repression work, so I don't really talk about repression, you see. But everything I say will sound really soothing to you and just feels true, because I am still might be speaking from that he my experience that I had in my awakening pointing. But if I'm not talking about the buried emotions, it's gonna feel very soothing to feel that, because if you're suffering and if you hear those things, it validates itself. The conditioning can validate itself from an authority or a teacher, and then you're just gonna keep coming back for more, But then the suffering will let you know. But everything that Scott will say, it's gonna might trigger you, because or he might not feels like he's not listening to you, or he doesn't know what I've been through, or all those things will come up. But that's where we want to get into. I don't know if I'm being clear, but those are the areas, the uncomfortable areas in our lives. So you could say almost, we're almost misguided, because we always follow good feelings and resonate, good feelings and how well we feel, how connected we feel. I'm not denying any of that. That is a result of the repression work too. But if you're still suffering, we don't know. We're kind of chasing that. We're gauging what's good and right or wrong based on that. But most likely, if you're repressed, triggering things are the places where you look for trick or triggering or any suffering or anything like that. So I don't know if I'm being clear, but maybe you can add to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I can because this leads also to the next and last topic for us today, which is also a big one. And it's a you kind of, you're touching into the controversial part of what we're doing because the book we wrote, the subtitle is the Dangers of Spiritual Seeking and Finding. Because it's one thing when you see yourself as a seeker to trust people who were like us or teachers because you're suffering and you don't know how to get out of it. But when you become a finder, it's just like a doctor who's the worst patient or an attorney who's the worst client. You can become closed because of the need for safety and love, because you can have a shift, for example, of some kind, and it gives you safety, but you don't realize that it gives you good feelings or whatever, but it's going to be temporary if you still have repression. And here's what I'll make the case first before I ask this question to you. I'll make this case for everybody listening. Go to ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT what happens in a human body, the chemical releases when you allow anger, hurt, sadness, and fear fully, when you don't repress them. Like all the chemicals can flow, and that's what everybody's looking for. It's embodiment. Just from a scientific standpoint, you can read about it that way. But then if you go into ChatGPT and you ask about in the past people who were really liberated, and you ask about their teaching and their life, there were people who allowed everything in one way or another. So it's all over, just waiting for us, but we're afraid of it because what happens, I think, is that we have some experience. This is the finding, that it's just enough to like, I'm okay. And it might even feel better than okay, because my shift was like, well, I'm everything. I'm more than okay. It's beyond okay. But that's the problem, because see, that realization was still blind to the buried emotions, and so it couldn't be sustainable. I guess my question is, finding, let's start with that topic, and maybe being, sometimes we become the most difficult student when we're a teacher or a finder, because I've actually worked with teachers and they're sometimes more difficult to work with, because if they really believe that their realization is the final one, it's very threatening. It's still ego. It's still the same thing. And so if I say, okay, but what if what you've landed on right now isn't really it? It's just this where you're hanging out now. It's fine, but there's more suffering coming. And if you look in your life, there's probably already suffering. If you pay attention, that's your greatest teacher. So, Toshi, the finding is something I want to focus on here before we end the podcast, because I think that people who are seeking, they might, listen to people who are teachers and others, because they don't know the way out of the suffering. We tend to sort of trust or distrust authority on that issue. But when we find, when we have a realization or a shift, we can be harder to reach because we still don't realize that we're driven by love and safety and approval, because the emotions are still buried. And that can make us very difficult to work with, or for us to even go deeper, because there's a certain element of finding that makes us feel safe. That's my first question, just to eliminate that. What do we mean by that? That a shift or experience could just be driven by safety?
Yeah, because it still needs validating, no? Because if you don't touch in the repressed emotions, you haven't fully seen the whole thing in some way. So even if you have experiences and you feel all these things, that if it's temporary experiences, then I think the finders needs to keep validating themselves. But how do they do that? To get love and approval, I think, from others, from their wounding, and that conditioning still runs. So I think just like you were saying about trauma bonding, that's what happens in, it's not just the seekers getting what they want from teacher, but teachers also getting what they want, which is being validating what they believe in or what their experiences are or what they found. They have to keep validating it because there is unconscious conditioning that says otherwise, because the suffering continues whether you like it or not, if you haven't touched very the emotions. And that's for everyone, whether you're a finder or seeker or teacher, or whatever it is, the suffering will let us know. But it's so easy to bury that suffering if you feel
Yeah.
like you found it, you see. And that's so one of the hardest people I train or mentor is, people who coach your spiritual teachers or those people, because they're so good at getting validation and, from outside to get their needs met, or to keep finding safety so that. And keep getting validation from others, because they have to. So, yeah, it's, yeah.
That's important to slow down for a second, because see, the utility inquiry changed it for me, and that's the missing key. Well, it was for me. For anybody in this path, if you think you're done, is because with utility inquiry, you can just sit there being as awareness. And I've sat with people, And they just had a shift, because you can have shifts here and real deepening, and you can also get stuck or bypass anywhere. So they'll just sit here and they'll say things like, "Well, but all there is this, and it's just being, and they're just trying to." So the mind manages safety and love, and I'm being bamboozled, really, and I know it. So I'm like, "Well, but just go into your body, because it keeps the score. It'll tell you immediately if you're afraid of something." And then, but there's a refusal. So that's what I'm trying to get everybody to look for, is the refusal, because it's coming from safety. And it's like we're just sitting here wanting to be done in different ways, or because we don't want to suffer anymore. We're tired of seeking. It's quite natural, but we're still not trusting our bodies. So I guess my question is, Toshi, I know, can you explain your use of utility inquiry? Have you used that with people? Or on yourself, I have, on having some insider shift and then hearing myself say something, but then I go into my body and it's like, no, I'm still angry and I'm afraid of it. And that's what's driving this.
I mean, if I had a mentee or a client or trainee who said, "No, I'm done, Toshi," and I've seen it. Oh, it's yeah, I'm I've seen it. And but if yes, that might feel true, but I would like to check energy on that in your body. Is there any agenda or anything behind that? Then, because everything's allowed, but can we check that? And that's where the utility inquiry will come. Are you getting out of saying that to me? Are you getting out of believing that you're done? But your mind would know. You can't even have a conversation about that with your mind. You must ask the body. So that's what we do to say, do I get anything out of saying that? And see, you'd be surprised how much energy is down there. But we've learned to, but he or she might have another way to avoid that up his sleeve to say, no, but that's just happening. This, just energy, just happening. But then we can keep challenging that because it's a thought and the sensation. So we can keep challenging that utility. So what do you get out of saying that to me then? And it's like, oh, and then something else in your body lights up. And then we can start to go into it. And then they might get frustrated. There's a little bit of emotion now, or they might start to withdraw. So they will start to feel more and more. That's how we start to crack the shield a little bit. But that's how I speak about utility, because there has to be a utility, for conditioning to exist. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just wants to protect you, because we don't want to suffer anymore. So it's a very innocent idea, but we just need to catch that. And the more we get good at finding safety and finding ways to get our needs met, it's really difficult to admit that you are still suffering and you are avoiding certain things. And yeah, so and spiritual finders and teachers, they're like a professional, just like how I was, and yeah, because we'll be the last one to know, as we always say.
Yeah, because the emotions and needs are buried. We're the last one to know, unless we're willing to go and look with skill. So here's I'm just reminding the audience that we're writing within the context, or we're talking right now within the context of just releasing a book, and the subtitle is The Dangers, includes the words "The Dangers of Spiritual Seeking and Finding." Because the way that Toshi and I wrote the book, I think we didn't make really much of a distinction. I don't think Toshi and I make much distinction between the two of us, between seeking and finding, because as long as there's repression and you can go into the body and see that repression is driving it, there's not, I mean, other than some of the finding arguably can have some peace in it. But I mean, I had cancer and chronic pain. It wasn't all it was cracked up to be. But my point is, we're already po like pointing this out in the book all the time. This isn't new for us. But and I'm going to keep asking Toshi about this topic, because I think that there are people who long for a shift or a realization. And if something happens, it's like the system kicks in immediately at an unconscious level, like, stay safe. This is safe. Stay here. And you're not aware of it. What would you say about that, Toshi? Just like that. You've talked about that like a vehicle that has these safety features and you don't hear them. And so one of the features of being human is you have an unembodied shift and your system is going, safe. Now you're safe. Stay here.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and so the bigger the safety, the harder to spot, and then the truer it feels, and you will land there. That means you will defend it to death, that belief, the fact that this is the case, or I am done. if that gave you the best safety you've been looking for all your life, you will go to war with it, to defend it, to argue with it, to validate it, whatever you do, because that's the conditioning and that's life and death. We must not feel our emotions from the conditioning point of view. So I could almost say I almost suffered more by finding what I was looking for, because that ticked off such a big box of safety that it made it so true that I didn't want to let go. I didn't even know I didn't want to let go. So I would defend it, but then you will suffer because the pleasure pain cycle, you know, you gain your pleasure, but yet the pain have to come. The cycle continues. And when I was seeking, I knew I was suffering, as it wasn't something right. But when I found it, and when I landed the fact that I experienced this, and this is the case, this is the truth, and I don't still deny what I've seen, but I'm talking about the conditioning here and the repression here. Just it kind of reinforced it. It was just that it was what I was always looking for, the biggest safety landing that I could have, you know, something that I can really believe in, to solidify this. This separate being or whatever it is, you know, and because I'm so scared, and I'm more scared, you know, unconsciously, of course. So, yeah, that's how I speak about that. But yeah.
It's pretty innocent when I think back of when I began teaching, because the same thing happened for me, the realization. And then the realization felt like, I am the street. I am whatever. I am that. And so in that moment, when the realization happened, there was no fear that I could detect. The repression was obviously didn't come into awareness. There was no anger, and there hadn't been any anger on my spiritual path, really, except for a few triggers slightly that touched into anger. So when I had this realization, it was like the non-conceptual whatever that you can't describe, which, but throughout history, people have been describing it in many different forms and different traditions. What happens, though, is now I know is that the conditioning that hasn't been made conscious then is still very much there. So the next day I went to work, and then I started to teach because of two things that were still buried, you could say, which was not just the need for safety from the buried anger. That drove me to teach to a certain degree. It wasn't just the realization. It's like repression gets you active in avoidance in different ways. And teaching is a good way to avoid some relational stuff that I needed to deal with. But the need for safety came with the need for love, because as soon as I turn around, I still have anger repression. I don't know that I'm getting love and staying safe as I'm teaching. That's how undetectable it is. So it's almost like you have to raise the standards in spirituality to me, because otherwise, I mean, we're not understanding that there's a default thing happening. It's not, we're not choosing it. Nobody's doing this on purpose. It's unconsciousness. So as soon as you have the realization, the next day, even if the realization is still there, you still have repression, you still have unmet needs. And if we could be that honest with each other, that would raise the bar.
And I do believe there are. Yeah, I
I was
do
going to,
believe.
sorry, Toshi, let me give you a prompt first. I didn't give you a good
That's okay.
question.
But I just wanted to share that I do believe that there is some tradition or teachings or teachers out there that sense there's a repression, or there's some deep unconscious things running their lives and stuff. And they keep, I hear, you know, them talk about it, but they're just not. They just stop in there, you know. That comes back to if you stop there, it's just as bad, you know. But if you don't know how and the context of what is happening, then you know it's just you just be stuck there, and you know, and because many people are more clued up as a collective on the planet, I think we are more tuned into our body than ever in some ways, and we do talk about a lot of this stuff. But if you don't get into it, if you don't know how to get to it and make that conscious, it's the same thing, and the suffering will continue. So it really is about how to, now it's about how to get there. So, because many good speakers and teachers out there, they might talk about emotional repression and stuff, but do you actually know how to get there? Or do you know the context of why that is so difficult to it? And that's what's the missing piece. And then that's what we have to keep talking about, it feels like, you know? So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of put that in there. Just curious.
Yeah, this also brings up another topic related to. I'm going to go a little bit deeper dive on a couple of things here before we end. One thing is just the addictive quality of having repressed emotions and then coming back to awareness. I mean, it's a very, very subtle and unconscious thing that most people wouldn't even find unless they did repression work. They might see evidence of it somehow, like in their lives, but it's like coming back to awareness when you still have buried emotions. It short circuits certain emotional experiences. So if I'm sitting with you, instead of really hearing you and feeling what I might actually feel in response, if I come back to awareness and I have repression, I'm going to drown out the anger in me, keep it down, and then obviously not respond to you in an authentic place. But that keeps me safe and therefore can become addictive in relationship. Even the awareness practices can be keeping us safe and becoming addictive in relationship for some people, or meditation. What do you say about that?
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's a form of dissociation to me. Like, we talked about hyper independence, that habit of creating it, creating a location. Like, or I say, the more I see it in people now is there is a tendency or like a pattern to create a separate awareness that is vast, empty, and big, which I call dissociating awareness. And we just dismiss the intimate body awareness because everything to do with repression and energy is in the body and we don't want to feel it. So if I start to feel uncomfortable by talking to you, and then I'll just go to the awareness that doesn't include the body awareness, and that just it's so subtle because you're still in touch with the awareness itself to a point because you can never get rid of it. So that's why it's so difficult to spot, especially when you found it, when you're seeing what awareness is and how everything is that and you are that and all of that. But we can subtly dissociate the body part because uncomfortableness, and that's done by conditioning. So it's very subtle until you have tools to actually check that. Because I was so blind to it, of not being able to catch that because it is like it's this vast quietness, empty space that is my head. But as soon as I drop lower than my heart to my body, that I could speak like this, different centers of myself into my belly and stuff, just like, ugh. Mud bubbling, but that's pure awareness too. But the awareness I wanted was not that. And I didn't even know that I was actually choosing that, or the conditioning is choosing that. I would naturally drift into this dissociated, independent, or not even just this vastness of, and it feels so soothing and it's so nice for a bit, for temporary anyway. And it's so hard to spot that, and many of us do that, That's how we stop hearing things. That's how we filter things out, like you're saying, We start to choose to see the world the way we want to see it. So it's not just in spirituality, of course, it's just about the way we see the world is most of the time determined by the conditioning of fear of feeling something,
It's so true. It's so true because, you can have quite an insulated life after realization, because if your framework still conceptually is the teaching or the understanding, you can drown out, like I did, science, which is over here. I think it's like spirituality shadow telling us that buried anger is like the number one emotional contributing factor. And like, just to shut that information out, and think about how many spiritual communities, or we all do it, where our frameworks are like this language loop. And we might think, well, that's just the teaching. Of course it is. That's the practice. That's the framework. That's the tradition. But what we're saying is that repression drives it all. So what repression does is it filters things out. So it becomes more than a framework. It becomes a way of staying safe, and it informs your world. So after you awaken, your world of spirituality could just be keeping you safe from things. And that's what I think everybody should hear, because people are interested in embodiment. You can't have that when your spiritual world is keeping you safe.
Because if you're fully in the body, that you can't filter anything out. You have to feel it. It's here and now. It's not a concept. It's a sensation. Yes, you might not feel all of it, but at least a little bit when you start to calm down, and that's scary for the condition itself. And I'm filtering out. Like the biggest filtering out that I did, and many people do, especially spirituality, non-duality, is filtering out relationships. Just this relationship, no, this relationship, it's all relationship, whether it's to, and we've talked about this before. So it's just about trying to be non-relational person by going to awareness or something, because it's so safe there, even though you're still suffering, and the conditioning just can't help it. So yeah, it's the best way to bury it because everything is relationship, especially when you come down here to feel as humans. As as you know, as a being, as ourselves. So, but it's, yeah, it's a real scary place.
You know, I've toyed with the idea myself of what's the, you know, the motive behind people, but it's just repression. Throughout history, there has systemically been a bunch of practices that have trained and programmed people who needed safety anyway, who wanted it, to pull away from their relationships and away from authenticity towards this sort of awakening that can somehow be separate from relationship. But then when you embody the awakening, you realize that that's impossible, that there's no such thing, and that a lot of it was just avoidance. So I've had to look at my role as a teacher, and I'm sure you are too. Is there anything you want to say as your role as a teacher who's now teaching of you didn't have to do that. You're coming fresh as a teacher where you don't have that history. But I have a history of being a part of that, you know, that sort of thing. And it's okay, I guess. Everybody says, well, everybody's doing it. That doesn't actually make it okay. It's okay because it happens. But here's Toshi, who's going to be doing something different. I thought, do you have anything to say on that? That you step into this role freshly with
Yeah,
this
I mean,
information?
I don't want to be a judgmental. I know better, so you should do this. But that's why we say the danger, you know, in our book, you know, danger of spiritual seeking, you know, finding is because body keeps the score, you know, and it's a serious matter for people. People get really ill, chronic pains, depression, and that's why I want to talk to, because everyone can do what they like, and it's okay. I'm happy if you don't feel you're suffering, and you just go out there and live. And if you need to look at it, the body will let you know. But how long are you gonna wait? You know, and do you have a car accident, or do you get chronic pain, or do you get depression, or is it, you know, it's that I wanna kind of make people more aware of those things that's running. But the choice is yours still. So it's not about forcing anything down, but I just wanna wave a warning sign as much as I can. And then I can't just wave anymore. I have to be in people's faces. Like, just like we talked about, depression filters things out. So we have to be louder than any other topics in the whole wide world, I guess, because this is something we really don't want to see and hear. But it's also very, very dangerous at the same time. But not, doesn't have to be for everybody. But why not? You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, that reminds me too of filtering out. So when I think about what we're doing, and we're talking about a subject that the human conditioning likes has to filter out, actually. So it's really, we've struggled in different ways. I don't think we've suffered. I haven't, but struggled to get the message across in social media. Luckily, there's a pretty, like across all my platforms, there's a pretty steady group of people that are definitely interested. They're not filtering it out. But I don't know. I think it's still interesting, and it's interesting for me too, but also for you, as we tackle this subject of how people filter out this topic. And yet, when you filter this topic out, you filter out the root of suffering. Is there anything you would say about that? Because that's conditioning that people can't help it. They turn us off because it's not safe to their unconscious.
Yeah, so. But again, you know, it's the suffering will let you know. But how long do you wait for that suffering? How long do you put it off? The more you find something that is safe for you and soothe yourself, you can keep putting off for a long, long time. But again, body keeps the score, as the science says. You know, it just will get worse at some point. If it's not physical conditioning, it will be some sort of mental or psychological stuff, that because we just cannot be ourselves. And that's, you know, if you're not feeling it, it has to go somewhere, and it's going somewhere within our body, maybe not physical, but it will start to manifest in physical, no? And that's what also science says. So yes, you might not hear us, but you're also hearing us at the same time, you know, because something is there and the suffering will be there. So I'm not too how do you say, worried about it, because people who need to hear it will hear it, but I think there's just not enough voice out there. And yeah, I just want to be there. And yeah, but it's not like I have to do this to get love and stuff, because I feel like that I had to really inquire into why I do this and why I talk about this. And there was part of me that wanted to be seen, to be loved from my depression too. I really needed to work on that. So there's no energy on that hardly anymore. But still, I, as a mentor and a teacher, have to keep looking at that. We all have to, because otherwise it will just become a trauma bonding. When you come and work with me, I will just get your love and you get my love, and we just keep talking about this, but without really going to the root of it. And it might feel really good in the beginning because I'm gonna say the things you want me to hear. But no, it doesn't work that way. So you see how things can be really triggering for us, but it can be, that might be what you need, you know? But we're not expecting you to fully understand that straight away. So it's that balance that we are kind of trying to manage too. So yeah, that's what I've got to say about that. But yeah.
Well, that raises issues because we've got a training program, and Toshi and I are going to be, and we have been running it, but in the future, Toshi and I will be very much involved at the top level on our training program, which means training to certify people who will go out and do this work with people. So I want to ask you a question there about that. So we have the training program, and we've made so many changes in the last 2 years to make sure that the training program aligns with the insights that we've seen. So, trauma bonding obviously can go on in any program, including someone who's training to be a mentor, a certified mentor here. How do you deal with different forms of trauma bonding and training?
Yeah, so to put it simply, is to continuous self work on especially if you want to become a mentor to represent KI out in the world. That includes myself and you, Scott, and Dan, everyone else. We are on each other to make sure that we are actually doing the work and kind of walking the talk, I guess. But also, again, the suffering will let us know will be a good one. So we'll always check each other's suffering and we'll check our bodies whenever we talk about it. But the main thing about training, because the prerequisite for training now is for you to be able to go through the mentorship so you know the tools, if kind of start to taste the freedom through emotional repression work, but you want to carry on further to actually, or you resonate with the work and you want to kind of go out there and spread whatever you resonate with KI. So, but the way we train is we really use our relationships now, because even if you can feel the anger and the sadness and the hurt within yourself, and you might start to express them, to turn up as yourself fully in relationships is can be scary. And then there's different fear will come up that way. So we use relationship between trainees, trainer relationship to really tap into that. So when I train or when you're training people, it's really, we don't, you're not necessarily learning new tools or anything, but to how to stay authentic within our training relationship and with your loved ones and with your close families. That's what we will really concentrate, training on, to be able to turn up. So when you do become a mentor and do start to work with clients or mentees, then you can actually turn up and not trying to seek safety or anything like that, where you catch it more and more, because we that's how important it is for us to be able to, for the individual to own the relationship and turn up. I don't know how else to say. I'm sure you can speak like this, Scott, too. But so we make sure that we bring it back to our needs, which is heavily connected to our relationships. So it's, yeah, we pretty much work on that mainly, because it's not necessarily so much about the tools, but it's really about the second core fear, basically, of not being able to fully turn up to life, which is a relationship in a way, and how we navigate that, Then, and everyone who does that work is already good enough, because everyone's individual, they have their own flavor, they can really flourish and go out there and do what they need to do and spread the work. And that's what we're looking for, really. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do the same. I see it the same way. Plus, we both work with attachment style. Speaking of needs, and I don't want to go too much into this because I know we're about to end here, but I'll just add this since you said what I would say would be getting to know people. I didn't know that I was avoidant. I didn't know that my conditioning with the buried anger was basically in every relationship disconnect. And so if I'm training someone and they want to be a certified mentor, I want to see the extent to which their avoidant or anxious attachment conditioning would be driving what they're doing in the world. So we focus a lot on that, if you ask me. What I was going to say, my last question to you, Toshi, is speaking of relationships, so how do people find you on social media, or do you have any meetings coming up?
Yeah,
Where to
so
find you to work with you?
I have my monthly free meeting now, so monthly non-duality and KI meetings. Basically it's like an introduction to KI a little bit, but really going into the context and maybe some experiential. So maybe if you're interested, come and see us in the meeting, ask questions, or just listen in, so you get the feel of what's happening there and what we do more specifically for certain issues or whatever. And obviously I do mentorship and intensive too, and also sessions, so you can find me on killerbee.com/toshi. So I'm gonna have all my products in one place, but we're working towards that. So, but you can find me on killerbee.com and Instagram and all those places, really. So yeah.
Yeah, if anybody's interested in training, nobody can come into training from the public. You have to go through mentorship and then you're invited. But if anybody's interested in that whole process, on any of the links that I've put up in previous podcasts, you could click on the Jumpstart links, scroll down the page, and come talk to me or Toshi on his link for free, just about the training and mentorship track and what we're looking for. So I guess my last thing is that we're going to put Toshi's link here in the description today to work with him, not in training because you have to go through mentorship first. But Toshi, can you tell people what link it will be here for them?
Yeah, so it'll be, I think, killerbee.com/toshi, and then within that page I'll have my products there. And just think about having a free clarity call with us or with me, and so I can explain to you, and then I can speak to you more directly with what you're facing in your life or wherever you come from or anything like that. They might make more sense to you, so that's about 15, 20 minutes, clarity call that you can have for free. So, and yeah, I love to meet people, so yeah, come and see me.
All right, thanks, Toshi, for coming.